This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Okay, it's officially 4:10, I guess, for tip in Tulsa, UB and Arizona State. Sal Capaccio, who was in this morning, and I'm sure up late last night with Syracuse as they went down to Baylor. How are you holding up, Sal, and what are your plans for consuming this UB game?
Well, I'm holding up fine. I took a little nap this afternoon when I came home before the games started, or this morning, I guess. I've been watching. So UB game, going to watch it here at home. Then probably around halftime or so, I'll go pick up Max from school and wait till the game is over. And then we got some dinner plans tonight. So we'll consume both of them, and the women's game will be on at the same time. So I'm just sitting here right now watching some of these games while I'm talking with you guys. And I don't know. I just threw this question. I'll ask you guys. Maybe it's a stretch. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm in the moment right now. But let's just say this happens. Let's just say Gardner-Webb does beat Virginia. They're up 6 at the half right now. I mean, Tony Bennett is such a great coach. He recruits good kids. He does everything right. But if he loses 2 times in a row as a 1 seed to 16, like, do you have to think about firing him? I mean, is that a stretch or no?
I really couldn't answer. I'm not close enough to it. I just know that I saw him at UB a couple years ago. He was 90. He did 30 songs.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah.
His daughter opened for him, and it was unbelievable. I don't know. Was Boeheim ever at a place where it was like that? I mean, he was never a loser as a 1. He lost as a 2.
And first ever 2 seed to lose, yeah.
Yeah, like, was he ever at a place where, you know, I know we win all the time, but don't we have to think about this? And, of course, you know, he's still coaching.
Right.
I think you'd be in a place right now with that, especially with the recruiting stuff that had happened a while ago. You know, I mean, there were people that think that, you know, they should have moved on from him a few years ago. I remember when I was a student there, I went to campus. I was on campus right then, the year after they lost to Richmond as the 2 seed. Mm-hmm. And within a couple years, they got put on probation. They missed the NCAA tournament. And people said, hey, you know, time to move on from this guy. They didn't. They went to the final in 96 with John Wallace. Of course, they had some nice years after that, won the national title, and then had some lean years. And I think because of all the other stuff that wound up happening and the vacated wins, that has percolated as of late.
What is the timeline on him? Realistically,
I think he wants to coach until his son graduates. His son is a freshman right now, Buddy Boeheim, who, by the way, I hate criticizing, you know, college kids, but he was awful last night. I mean, he was he was really, really bad last night, and like defensively especially, but he couldn't hit anything, and he's a good 3-point shooter, but you know, he's a nice player, but he was bad last night. I think Jim wants to coach until he graduates.
I hate to criticize college kids, but he was awful.
Horrible.
He was awful last night.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you about the Virginia coach. I mean, you know, the fact that they've had these 2 years back-to-back where they've been 1 seeds, I mean, you know, from a distance, I'm inclined to go, all right, it's fluky, it's really weird, but come on, stay the course. Right. The program's in great shape.
They were down 12 or so, maybe more. Like, if they win today, it'll feel like a good win.
Right, I know, right?
You know, it'll be a good win.
I'm watching this game, and I got to tell you, like, I watch a lot of ACC basketball, especially a lot of college basketball, but I have not seen any team take apart Virginia's defense the way this team is right now. It's pretty incredible, actually, and they weren't missing it. A little while ago, I looked at the stats that were hitting 58% from the floor, which was incredible. So we'll see what happens. You know, I think Virginia will still win, but you never know. I thought that last year. They were tied 21 all at halftime last year when they lost. They've given up 36 points at the half in this game.
Couple other things related to the tournament before we get to the Bills. Yesterday on this show, it was big news, the determination of the top 10 sports days of the year in America. And yesterday came in second behind the draft?
I think the NFL draft ended
the NFL first draft place. Was the winner. And so is that nuts or is that right?
I think the NFL draft being that high is pretty crazy.
I had it rated first. Like I pushed it up the board.
Wow. What were the choices? Were there certain choices? I'm sorry.
Well,
or
for
was
the
it
first
just any day of the sports year,
sure, anything that's a regular yearly. So like no Olympics, right. But like a yearly occurrence, like game one of the World Series. You can't say game seven of the World Series because you don't get it every year. You know, first day of the tournament, opening day for NFL, opening day for baseball, first night of the Stanley Cup playoffs in hockey, like all the Kentucky Derby, Daytona 500, those sorts of things.
Week one in the NFL is my number one.
Yeah, I would say, Mike, to me, I think it's probably either that or the day before and day after the All-Star game in baseball, right?
When there's nothing going on?
That's right, yeah.
Right.
So I would say the Sunday, the first Sunday of football would probably be it for mm-hmm. me, but I'd vote tournament day one. Look, I think tournament day one is way better than tournament day two because of the anticipation, the excitement, your first chance at, everybody's got a clean bracket, right? Everybody's 0-0 and you're looking and you have a chance, and then you know day two you might have a little bit of fatigue on it, and you know you watch that, you stayed up, so I do think day one is better, but day two is still really good, obviously. And then I think next weekend is a great round. It's a great weekend of sports. The Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, we usually get some really, really blue blood programs that meet up every year.
One more. I'd like to know how you feel about UB, and if this is the right word, inroads that UB has made into the Buffalo sports conversation.
I do, but I think they're helped out because the Bills and Sabres just haven't been that good. And you know, they're doing it at the right time. They're doing it when people are looking for something to attach to because we don't have winners right now. You know, the Bills made the playoffs last year, and that was great. But for the better part of, you know, two decades, they have not. And the Sabres obviously are on the verge of having the longest playoff drought in the NHL. I can't believe I just said those words.
Yep.
But that's going to happen, it looks like, at the end of this season. And I think that UB is striking gold at the right time. You know, it's great anytime they do it, but they're finding their way a lot quicker to the top of that chart where people want to look for something to be proud about and happy about. And here you have this team that's winning when these other teams with the name Buffalo are not. So I do think they're making inroads, but it's a lot easier and quicker because of the situation that the pro teams are in.
Boy,
you look around the MAC, and I'm sorry, if you look around the MAC, it's the only school in a city that has pro teams with it, right? I mean, so they're in a unique situation where they normally have to fight for those dollars and eyeballs. They don't have to fight right now because of the situation with the Bills and Sabres.
Well, that's a really solid point, Sal, because right now if the Sabres had maintained whatever pace they would have needed to still be in a wild card race, it'd be a lot harder to have shows focused on them and have us be like just so intent on talking about it. It would still be awesome, but it probably would not be dominating our airwaves like it has been.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, Nate Oates is a guy that you can root for, I think. And I think him signing two extensions now, last year and this year, I think people, you know, what we have this complex in Buffalo. Nobody wants to be here. They want to leave. Bobby Hurley used Buffalo as a stepping stone, which is fine because he built the program to a certain level. But, you know, here's a guy that we're embracing, I think, because he wants to stay here. And he's kind of trying to build this program for however long that lasts. So I think there's a lot of good things at play that make us feel good about the UB Bulls right now.
Sal Capaccio with us. UB in Arizona State, just about to tip in Tulsa. One more time, ESPN 1520 has the UB men's broadcast and AM 1400 and 107.3 FM, by the way. We'll have the women's game, which starts in 20 minutes or so. Go Bulls. All right. Jake Fisher, a new signee by the Bills. I don't think I knew this name. He is a tight end now. He was a tight end 4 years ago for Cincinnati and has played tackle since. Do I have it?
Yes, that is correct. He kind of did the reverse of Jason Peters, right? Jason Peters went from tight end to tackle. This guy's going from tight end to tackle to tight end. So I guess he did the same thing, but you know, not comparing him to him, not at that level necessarily, but a guy that is an athlete and, you know, he played tight end in college, came in the NFL, played tight end, tackle. He dropped a lot of weight. He went from like 305 to 310 down to like 285, I think, to be able to play tight end. So, you know, he's kind of dedicated himself to trying this position and to being that guy. So we'll see where it goes. They even switched his number at one point. He was in the 70s. He went to 44, Mike, in order for him to be able to line up as an H-back sometimes in Cincinnati. So, you know, he's done what he's needed to do to stick around, and he's a good, big athlete. So, hey, the Bills are going to try and see what they can get, and maybe – you don't get anything out of them, but why not? You get 90 guys on the roster, and this is another piece of the offense.
So you wouldn't feel like this answer is the blocking tight end. I mean, he certainly is someone who qualifies as a blocking tight end, I assume because of his offensive tackle background, but would not be like closing the door on still adding another tight end.
That's right, and I don't think they're looking now to add another quote-unquote blocking tight end from, like, the draft or a high-priced free agent at all, or even maybe a free agent out there. I think Tyler Kroft is kind of that guy. He's more of a blocker who can go out to catch passes, and then this might be your guy who you can use maybe as that other blocking tight end. You have Jason Kroom on the roster, but I've believed since the end of the season that they were going to look for more of that type, like a Tyler Kroft in free agency, and then go out and get the pass-catching tight end who you can develop to get more of a well-rounded blocking game as he develops, you know, in the NFL. And I still think that's going to be a big on their to-do list in the draft. Whether that's 9 or later in the first round if they trade down or second round, I think they're looking for a pass-catching young tight end in this draft.
So it's another addition to their offense, and the draft is yet to come. And this is something we've, you know, talked about how, and it's interesting to me, and telling about the sport, that you have all these additions, and none of them is an all-pro, but it's, you know, some recognizable and respectable names. It's probably not going to change the outlook on the Bills, you know, overall, objectively. I like the win total for that mostly, but I think in terms of predictions, you'll see what it would normally be. Anyway, so 7 wins or so. How do we figure out if there's any way to do this, Sal, over the course of the offseason, whether or not it's right to think they'll be a lot better than that? Like, Allen is the variable. He's the big variable. And if he comes back next year and is better, if his accuracy is just a level higher somehow, then it might be a different conversation. We might have a different team than the experts might expect. So how do you – are there clues that are out there between now and – I don't know, week one even. Obviously, you'll have preseason games, but what might be the signs?
Okay, so I think that no matter – you're right. I mean, they could sign all these guys. It's all about Josh Allen, right? But look, you can have 12 free agents on offense, which is what they have now, and add a little bit to the defense and go out and, you know, use the draft, and it's going to be nice pieces. But at the end of the day, of all those things, the most important thing for this team right now, the most important thing that's happening in this offseason is Josh Allen – is getting every single rep as the number one quarterback the minute they walk back in that facility on April 15th. That is the number one most important change that's going to happen with this team. Yes, the personnel is going to matter. There's going to be some guys there. They're going to help. But Josh Allen was number 3, basically, essentially, other than rookie minicamp, every time they were out there for any sort of camp or minicamp or training camp, and then he got a little more reps as the season, as the preseason went on. He became a number 2. Maybe he divided up more. He was getting a third to a half at the most. He is the man right now. And I think the clues would be, Mike, just basically people like me or other people that you listen to or watch who are going to practice and saying, is Josh looking like is he looking like a starting quarterback who can make the throws, who can be accurate, who can hook up with these guys, have that chemistry? I think that's what you're going to have to look for. And you're just going to have to, I think, trust the things that you hear and see from people who are out there. But that is, to me, absolutely the number one thing that's the most important in this offseason and the change from last year.
Yeah, we obviously don't, you know, can't see any of that now. We're not even anywhere near organized team activities, and of course training camp isn't until the end of July. What's a realistic expectation sitting here today, Sal? Like, should it be in year 3 for these guys running the show, second year for the quarterback, and they've added pieces to support him, both the line and skill positions? Like, should we be expecting a playoff team here? Whatever the number is in Vegas, like Mike's already made the point, like from outside, it's going to be probably what it's been, pretty close to it anyway. But like here, internally, even like what do you think they're going to be expecting?
I think they're expecting to compete for the playoffs and being right there at the end and hopefully be a playoff team. I mean, maybe they expect to actually make the playoffs. I think some of those things are so out of your control, randomness, injuries, stuff like that. I think every move they've made, the way that they've attacked this offseason, the plan, if you go back to when Brandon Bean got here, even Sean, and then especially Brandon, the clearing of the salary cap, and then, you know, where they've gotten that situation and the players, things like that, I think that it speaks to me that they expect to compete for the playoffs this year, if not make the playoffs. So I don't think it's unreasonable or unrealistic for us on the outside to expect that as well. Because if they're expecting it, then I think we should expect it. Because, look, I mean, last year, let's be honest, guys, as much as it was nice and, you know, people are going to be fans and, you know, you start off the season and you might be excited, you got this kid with the big arm, I think really, like, they probably down at One Bills Drive, it would, yeah, sure, maybe they can make the playoffs and things can go right like it did in 2017. But their realistic expectations probably were, we're going to take a step back because this is year one, even though it's year two, because they flip-flopped kind of how they had their expectations the previous year, if that makes sense.
Just keep thinking about, and there's no point in exploring this because it's in the past, just thinking about, like, what could have been different last year? Like, this point, I've heard you make it a few times now that you made today about how Allen is the number one quarterback from day one. That was available to them last year had they opted for it. They could have done that last year. You know, the Jets got to Darnold by week one, but even they didn't do that like right away. None of the teams that drafted rookies did that. But it was something that they had control of. And we still don't know.
But again, exactly. It goes back to maybe, Mike, expectations of where they were and what they thought of. I think if you look back, and a lot of people said this, I think from the very beginning, they didn't necessarily expect to be a playoff team. They might have expected to take a little step back, right, internally. And if you're going to do that, you maybe you want to get your quarterback a little time to breathe. And I don't know. And you're right. They could have just put him out there, and maybe that's the case to put him out there and say, well, if you're not going to, you might as well give him the reps, right? But they did have that available to them. But now there's obviously, hey, this is the guy. This is what we did. I just think last year they probably knew going into the season, hey, you know what? Like, we exceeded expectations this year. We still have a pretty bad salary cap situation. I don't really think we can expect to do that necessarily.
And he also did start week two.
Yeah, he did.
Like, rest of that point is, right. So what was the plan exactly for him to go in? It was not for him to start week two.
Right, halftime of the opener.
If they knew he was going to start week two, they would have done this, I think, last year. But anyway, it doesn't matter. You know, I don't want to spend too much time bringing that up. It's just something that's just curious.
So, Sal, you're heading for Arizona once the new week gets here, right? You're going out there like Sunday, and you'll be there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Owners' meetings are happening. And I guess what is the top of the agenda here, officiating and sky refs and adding layers to review? Like, are those the things? Although I saw a piece today that seemed to indicate that the sky judge has no support within the competition committee at this point.
Yeah, I think there's two things. It's reviews and overtime. I think those are the two things that are really at the top of the agenda, as you say. I think those are the two things everybody's going to be talking about. There are proposals on each of them. There are tons of proposals dealing with reviews and how to do reviews and what plays are reviewable. You know, everything from player safety reviews, you know, can we go back and review that to see if a guy should be, you know, ejected or what the 15-yard penalty should be, to if there's a call on the field that, you know, over if an interception happens, for example, a turnover, and then there's a score, but there's a penalty on the play, should we review that score? Because right now they don't, because all scores are reviewed. Should, you know, two-point conversions, I didn't realize two-point conversions and extra points don't fall under the every score is automatically reviewed. That's actually on the table this year, which kind of surprises me. I didn't know that. Overtime, you know, should each team get a possession in overtime, you know, coin toss in overtime, all those things, but those are the big ones for sure.
Wow. So you're telling me two-point conversions, which are basically touchdowns, aren't automatically reviewed?
Apparently, according to the way I read it, that is on the agenda, which makes it seem like it is not already an automatic review.
Wow. I wonder why that is. Like, I mean, I'm not one who wants more replay, but it just, that doesn't make sense. You know, it's a scoring play. I guess what, it's only 2 points, so it doesn't matter as much. I mean, I don't know.
Right, I don't know. And then the other thing is, there is a proposal to review like basically fourth downs that are short of the line. And so they what a lot of coaches are trying to do here is, and teams are, you know, proposing things to basically not have coaches use challenges for things that you can now, well, that's automatically reviewed. For example, fourth down short of the line, and they're going to automatically review it. That's a proposal, instead of having a coach challenge the spot. But then my question is, well, how close does it have to be an automatic review, though? Like, what are we talking about here? Those things are really hard to figure out.
Your receivers are going to be a handful in February fix. I'm looking at that roster right now. Michael Thomas, Odell Beckham. I mean, I would say Beckham didn't get worse value-wise by that trade.
No.
Keenan Allen and Robert Foster. I want to be optimistic about Robert Foster. You have other guys, too. Aguilar. But Michael Thomas and Beckham, those had to be your top two picks.
Yeah, I went receiver heavy early.
Maybe top three picks with Allen.
Yeah, I think it was too. I did. I think I went receiver right away, all three, because it just didn't seem, there were the running backs were going off the board pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on that, Sal.
Yeah, thank you. I got the. I'm watching UB just to give everybody an update. They're down 10-8 here.
12-8.
But the. Oh, thank you very much.
You're behind us. How is that happening?
Right.
Yeah, I know, right? I was just telling Joe actually in there that I was a little behind you guys with my cable I'm watching it on. But here's the other thing that's really interesting. Colgate has come back and now trails Tennessee by 1 point with 12 and a half minutes left.
All right, I'm for that. Fine.
Max did a bracket, and it took me a while to realize that he was only picking the second team I named every time. So if you go by the bracket, the second team is always the worst seed. So he basically has six. He has 3 16 seeds beating number one seeds, including Gardner Webb. By the way,
this could be the year. I am sure I will see a picture of it on my social media if they actually
win.
Right. I will see a picture of him in his bracket. Thank you, Sal. Enjoy your trip.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll connect next week with Sal when he's in Arizona for the NFL owners meetings. His appearance with us there on the Western Hotline, sponsored by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
12-10, Arizona State. Nobody's really opened this up yet. 12:46 to go, first half. UB, Arizona State from Tulsa, ESPN 1520 with the game. The women's game yet to start. That'll be on AM 1400. We're in here. We're watching that. We're talking to Sal, trying not to get too distracted. Let's play a game or something. Maybe we can play a game.
All right. I'm up for a game.
Right?
Yeah. Might as well do something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching this game.
I'm trying.
I'm really interested in this game. I want them to win.
Right.
I feel it. So let's play a game.
We didn't, by the way, interrupt the appearance with Sal there we had a game go final while we were talking to Sal there. And it's a big one for pick 9.
UC Irvine, they haven't lost in like 2 months. It's their first ever tournament win, a 13 seed. So thank you, 13 points.
Big points. So you surge into the lead.
Great.
In the pick 9 with the big 13 points from Irvine.
I also have Oregon, which is a 12. And if Oregon wins, they would play UC Irvine. That's Oregon, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a 5 seed, but they're a 2-point favorite. So almost a coin flip there. I would love that. It'd be in great shape.
What time is that game at?
Right now. It's going to start in like 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Good.
Yep. 803-0550, 1410 Arizona State first half. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
They're a mid-major that doesn't play like it. They don't look like it. They have all the ingredients, you know, of a top team. And so, you know, we're going to have our hands full. It's going to be, we're going to have to. They're not going to back out of a game, man. You gotta beat Buffalo. They're not just going to, give in to you at any point.
Bobby Hurley, Arizona State coach, earlier today or yesterday. It was today. UB is now up by 8. They're on a 14-2 run and lead 24-16, a little over halfway through the first half.
Love that I was just reading people a bunch of stuff about Tyreek Hill and Chris Sale, and I missed the part where... Well, I guess hopefully UB, well, they've taken control of the game for now. It's still a lot of time left. It's only the first half, but I missed the whole thing. They were tied when we started the update, and now they're up by 8.
Yep.
That was pretty fast.
That can happen.
Yeah.
It's just kind of cool. Like, Bobby Hurley, I don't know, I've never had any negative, since he became UB's coach and then since. I've never had any negative impression of him. He wasn't my favorite player at Duke, but whatever. So you either love Duke or you hate them. But it's just so, like, it's really not that long ago that we never would have ever even considered that Bobby Hurley would be coaching here. And now he's coaching against a UB team as his former team, which is in the tournament, you know, for the fourth time in 5 years. And he deserves, he has a lot to, he gets a lot of credit. He deserves a lot of credit for that reality. He kind of started,
He started it and he hired Nate Oates. So, like, that's, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, you just, how fine the line can be. I mean, Nate, to his credit, must have impressed. I mean, Bobby Hurley leaves. You would understand if there was pressure. I know how I reacted when they hired Nate Oates. I'm like, who, what? You said Bobby Hurley is your coach, and now it's Nate Oates. And so he must have impressed them, and good for them for being open to that, because it seems like, I think I heard yesterday that Bobby Hurley had offered Nate an opportunity to go to Arizona State with him. So, you know, if UB had even maybe dragged their feet a little bit, who knows where this all is, you know? And here we are, and, like, Nate has taken the program. It's not to say Bobby Hurley couldn't have built the program that Nate has now built, but, you know, not for nothing. They've been coaching these teams the same amount of time, and UB comes into this thing as the favorite. Like, they've had the better year, and that's pretty great.
Yeah, he was a high school coach at Romulus in Michigan near Detroit. I mean, good players, good basketball for high school basketball, and Hurley nabbed him from a practice. Like, he impressed and decided to go do it. And I also like that Nate was a math teacher. I think the first at-length conversation I had with him about basketball, like, there was a lot of math in it. 24-16 UB, and they have the ball now after an Arizona State turnover. Also, only two fouls so far for the Bulls to 5. Want to play a game?
I love games.
Name the 11 players to score 40 goals in a season for the Sabres without a mistake.
11 players who've scored 40 for the Sabres. All right. Well,
this is called counter-programming, folks.
Yep. That's how you do it. That's how you got to do it. Going back, Rick Martin is probably the first guy to do it with 44 his rookie year.
That's right.
After him, I don't know when Gilbert Perreault would have first done it. He's certainly on the list, but I know Danny, obviously, his rookie year. Danny Gare's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Perreault is on the list.
Mm-hmm. Three times. Each of them, Gare and Perreault, three times. Martin, five times.
Boy, I'm on my own here on Rene Robert. I know he had a 100-point season in there somewhere. I want to wait on him for now. Just to be safe, I think I'm going to wait on him for now. Dave Andrechuk is on the list.
Two times.
Alexander Mogilny is on this list.
Once, and he almost doubled it.
Right.
76.
Right.
By far the team record. What's second in team history for goals in a season? Mogilny, 76. Second?
Danny Gare, 56.
Gare, 56. Right. 1979-80. That might have shared the league lead.
Yeah.
The hockey card that year. The three guys on the...
Yeah.
Did he share the league lead?
I don't know. I don't know that.
I want to guess Blaine Stoughton...
Wow.
Gare and Simmer, maybe. Or Dion, right. One of those two. I'm going to look that up when we're done. 1980. UB up 5. 3-point play, Arizona State to end that streak.
How many guys have I named so far?
Andrechuk, Gare, Martin, Mogilny, Perreault. 5.
5, okay.
Thomas Vanek.
Thomas Vanek did it twice.
Did you say LaFontaine?
No, I did not.
Pat LaFontaine.
LaFontaine did it three times. 40 or more.
Miroslav Shatan.
40 goals on the number. 98-99, the finals year.
I was a little worried about him. Honestly, I really was. Joe
is incorrect.
This isn't a guess.
It's not over yet, though.
Did Danny Briere get there?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm going to say almost for sure no.
Okay.
94 points? No, he didn't. Okay. I don't think so.
I know Drury didn't.
Drury got the 37.
Right.
I looked that up the other day.
Did he?
Yep.
You think we'll meet him now when he's in this new role? Like, is USA Hockey GM such a position that, like, he would cross our paths again?
I want to say I hope so.
He'll be at 716 one day?
Yeah.
And we'll be asked if we want to talk to Chris Drury?
We'll have to have an announcement with a big event that involves USA Hockey. And, like, I don't know, the World Juniors were just here and had the outdoor game. That's the last time we had all those people with us here.
All-American Prospect game could come back. Yeah. I think it's been in Philly.
Right. Up 10. Massenburg, a long three. Good. Up 10. Am I wrong doing that? Like, are we ahead of the TV or something? Is anybody watching the TV and listening to us? And am I spoiling anything with these updates?
We'd be behind.
12.
We'd be behind the people watching.
31-19. They look great.
That's what I would think, too, but it was weird that Sal was behind us. That's why I think he asked, yeah. But, all right.
Timeout. Up 12.
I guess I, at this point, feel the need to circle back to Rene Robert.
You ever felt that out there, folks? You ever felt the need to circle back to Rene Robert?
We all get to that point in our lives. I mean, it can be a challenging thing to have to consider, but I'm doing it.
40 twice.
All right.
There's 40 goal scorers, and a lot of these guys are guys who scored exactly 40 goals in seasons. Robert did twice. Chatanz was exactly 40. Vanek got exactly 40 once. Andrechuk exactly 40. LaFontaine. And there's one more. Gilbert also 40.
All right.
1993. 1993 just stands out like crazy in scoring, you know? Like, Perreault had 113 points, 75-76. LaFontaine had 35 more points than that.
Right.
Yeah, that was... how many are left?
Yeah,
two are left.
One of the few hockey cards I still possess is a card that's called Nifty 50, and it's all the 50 goal scorers from that 93 season, and there's like 18 of them.
Right. Did Brett Hull ever play for the Sabres? Brett Hull, no. So he's not on the list. I'm thinking about Mike Foligno.
I don't hate that.
Mike Foligno's a guess.
41 goals, 85-86 in a season in which he had 168 penalty minutes, by far the most of anybody in a Sabres 40-goal season. Gehr is second and third on that list.
Right. I want to say nobody else I've ever seen has done this.
There's only one more name left. You've got 10 out of 10. You're like the UC Irvine Anteaters shooters. Just unbreakable.
It's probably someone...
90s?
That I'm forgetting from... No, I'm thinking like the high-scoring teams from early. And like somebody who had some crazy year just, you know, just along for the ride over there. But, I mean, I don't know who... I don't know who that would be, though. Like, Dudley never got there. McNabb might have been 30 before he went to Boston. I need a name here. Ray Shepard?
I kind of like that.
I'm going to say Ray Shepard. My guess.
It is not Ray Shepard.
Damn it. Fire's out.
I don't think Pominville ever got there. He came close, but I don't think he ever got there.
Guys who scored between 35 and 40. Guys who scored between 35 and 39, inclusive.
Oh.
Shepard.
I think I know.
Drury. Tony McKegney with 37 one year. Jeff Skinner is at 37 at the moment. Going to mention in the beginning that that's why I thought of this. And Dale Hawerchuk, who had 35 in a strike year. 93-94, was that a strike year? I think it was.
Turgeon.
Turgeon is the answer.
You know, when we started the game, I'm going to use UB. I'm going to use the UB crutch.
Here we go.
I'm distracted. We started this, and I thought, don't forget about Pierre Turgeon. I'm not even kidding. Like, it was in the back of my head, and then I went all the way to the beginning of the franchise, and I just jumped past Turgeon.
89-90, a very good Sabres team. Third overall in the regular season, out in the first round against the team that finished fourth overall in the regular season. Remind me to tell Travis Yost about that if he doesn't remember it, because he's always got that the lack of fairness in the current playoff format on his mind. Like, all right. In 1990, 1-3-4 were all in the same division. Not too different than this year. Toronto has really slipped, though. Okay, we have... I got to be a little more careful. One person did say I'm ahead of the stream, so I don't want to just be like...
Okay.
As soon as they score, like, score! I want to go a little slower. It's 31-19. There's a replay or something going on now. There's a little bit of a break.
They're trying to figure out where the ball may have struck the back of the backboard or the side of the backboard, and they're trying to determine possession here, I think, is what's happening.
Virginia up 14 now, 10 minutes to go in the second half. They're probably fine. Tennessee up 6 over Colgate. That's a 2:15 game, 3:07 left in the half.
And the UB women are up 12-10 with 5 minutes left in the first quarter.
Quarters, right. Quarters.
Quarters.
Is it 10-minute quarters?
I'd assume so.
I think so. And women?
Can't imagine it's 15.
UB and Rutgers in that game. All right, Don. Happy weekend, everybody. 803-0550 to join us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
What? I'm at the Taco Bell.
What?
I'm at the Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
Wow. This is a throwback.
This is going to be a thing next week. Joe found gold. Joe found the history of the show.
Yeah. He's bringing this back right now for us as a teaser, because our deal of the day is an opportunity to, well, I'm just going to read what it says here. Take a slice out of your check. Next time you dine in at Pizza Hut, get $30 towards pizza, drinks, and more for just $15 at Pizza Hut. That's a 50% savings. It's the deal of the day. For My Buffalo Perks, details at mybuffaloperks.com.
And I can't take credit. Tom Sitch is the one who really... uncovered most of it.
Yeah, so Tom Sitch, our former producer, tweeted that he found the candy draft online. And that means everything is online?
Pretty, not everything, but a lot.
Right.
You went back to what year?
2009, I think, was the furthest back I found, which was the Thanksgiving draft. Where I found Mike drafted ham in the second round.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy, that's been 10 years. That's coming up on 10 years since I drafted ham. Wow, it makes sense because I just remembered I've only eaten ham for 10 years.
Like, just so terrible. Bad. It's so bad.
Now that you mentioned it has been 10 years since so I've only started eating bad. Ham.
Oh, I'd love to know how outraged I was about it. I can't remember. I don't even remember Thanksgiving draft.
I don't either.
I love seeing I remember candy draft because your niece was here. So, like, that's memorable. But, man, a lot of stuff I just completely forget about. So it was nice. I saw Greg Bauk get in on that and was talking about some stuff. That of course he was involved in that had me thinking of other stuff and like, holy cow, it really opens up a trap door to the old history, the old memory bank here.
Yeah, and that is only good. That is right, only good.
Right.
Tom, I did not listen back to it, but Tom's original tweet today was he loved get mad at his Reese's Pieces pick.
Something about Reese's Pieces.
I think it was that you mentioned how they were peanut butter and chocolate, and Tom was mad that it's actually just peanut butter. Something along those lines. Like, what was actually in it?
Tom, nobody's ever been mad like he gets mad. I say that with peace and love. yes. Good. UB up 12 at a timeout, 39-27. They're still... 5 or so minutes to go in the first half, 4 or 5 minutes to go in the first half. So maybe we got a ways to go here, but they look really good, both ends. up 12 over Arizona State. Biggest lead was 14. They were down 14-10. So since then, 29-13 in favor of the Bulls. Joe, you have the women?
Not at this moment. 23-19.
Up
23-19.
Up 23-19.
Over Rutgers.
Yes.
All right.
First half. Virginia has pulled away in their game. We'll do the scores here in sports, and then on we go. 803-0550 if you want to call in. I mean, I'm thinking like you're watching this game, but sometimes guys on the radio without thinking, they go, if you're listening, I mean, you're listening. So you want to say something, today's kind of a different day for us. We're watching this game. We're going to talk about it. We might even broadcast some of it, simulcast the UB broadcast with Josh Wetzel later on. We'll see. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. This is WGR.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.